Peter Schiff, chairman of ShiftGold.com and author of several bestsellers. You were complaining about the air conditioning earlier, and we were scratching our heads here in the studio. What's he talking about, air conditioning in November, almost December?
No, well, I mean, it's nice to be out here in Puerto Rico. You know, it's beautiful weather and low taxes. So temperature's high, taxes are low. Good. Yeah, if anybody is tired of paying high taxes and they don't like paying federal income taxes, check out Puerto Rico. I mean, it's a great place to relocate and eliminate most of your U.S. tax burden.
There's another key point to this narrative that you bring up on the precious metals. It wasn't just a love affair with that almost no non-existent market, cryptos, okay, that started to stick its head out last year. The real story here was U.S. and also global equities. Now, that is over, at least in the near term. We've seen several months of intense selling, a little bit of fear in the volatility index, a little bit of concern has entered the market. So some of that money is obviously looking for a safe haven.
Just the U.S., I mean, and emerging markets, so those stocks have starting to come up recently, so they're starting to look like they've washed out because they actually, a lot of the emerging market stocks are up so far this quarter, and that's obviously not the case for the U.S. stocks, and particularly the, you know, the NASDAQ-type stocks, FANG stocks. So we're starting to see some good relative strength now starting in the emerging markets, but for a long time, the U.S. has been the only game in town because the dollar has been strong, and everybody's been talking about the biggest economic boom in U.S. history, which is all a bunch of nonsense, but people still talk about it. And with the dollar rising, that has caused a lot of money to come into the U.S., but people are overlooking the fundamentals. I mean, we just printed the worst trade deficit in U.S. history today for goods. We have never lost worse on trade. This is the worst we've ever done. In fact, this most recent trade figures, we had a plunge in exports. Imports went up. It's a complete disaster. So the trade deficit is running out of control. The budget deficits are on fire. We're going to have bigger deficits under Trump during a recovery or during growth than we had under Obama during the Great Recession. And so that means the next economic downturn, which I think is going to happen, so overdue, but probably should happen by 2019, but we're going to have $3 trillion a year budget deficits in the next U.S. recession. And so when the Fed has to surprise all the markets by slashing rates back to zero, which is what it's going to do in one big swoop, they're just going to go all the way to zero, you know, like without pass and go, and they're going to relaunch quantitative easing. And this time it's going to have to be much bigger than the last three combined. They're going to have to probably do a couple hundred billion, maybe 300 billion a month. They went down to zero very, very quickly. They didn't go down a quarter of a minute. They just slashed rates slowly.
What are they going to do? Are they going to go into negative interest rates like we saw in China and in the Eurozone?
That's a tough call. I mean, real rates, of course, I mean, real rates are still negative. I mean, they've never moved real rates positive yet. The inflation rate, even the way the government measures it, is higher than the nominal interest rate. So we've had negative real rates the entire time. But whether we'll actually have negative nominal rates, I mean, that's a tough call if we're actually going to go that deep into the rabbit hole. But I do think we're going to go to zero. And the reason I think we're going to get there so quickly is because the Fed is likely going to be blindsided by the economic data. And generally, the last thing that happens is the big uptick in unemployment, right? Because recessions don't start because people get laid off. People get laid off because we're in a recession. The businesses never anticipate the recession by laying people off. Once they get blindsided by it, they react by laying people off. So the last thing to happen is you get a big spike in unemployment. You get the collapse of non-farm payrolls. And so the Federal Reserve is just watching employment as a sign. But by the time they see, you know, negative 500,000, negative a million jobs, and we're going to get that, there's going to be big layoffs. Unemployment's going to spike up. They're still going to have interest rates way up there.
That's the typical economic cycle. Okay, I'm with you. You know, we've had a big boom, so you get a big bust. I'm with you. However, Mnuchin and our current Fed head, Powell, do not strike me in any way similar to Bernanke and Paulson. You know, the last team, Paulson was a seasoned financial individual, and Bernanke had studied the Great Depression. That was his big background. I don't see any parallels there. So what I'm afraid is going to happen this time is that they're going to drop the ball. Unlike, let's say, 2007, 2008, 2009, where they obviously had to act quickly or the whole system would grind to a halt. I don't see that leadership.
I mean, yes, he's not as much of an academic as some of his predecessors, not really an economist. And so that could be a positive. But if you listen to the things that he's saying, he is so oblivious to the problems that exist, just like predecessors. And I think he's grossly you know, underestimating or overestimating the ability of the U.S. economy to withstand higher interest rates. He doesn't understand the degree to which the U.S. has been addicted to ultra-cheap money and the enormity of the debt and the problems that we have. Now, maybe he does understand these things, and he's just lying about it. I mean, you never know, because a lot of these Fed chairmen feel that their job is just to be cheerleaders and to just be optimistic no matter what, because they're afraid of being pessimistic and then creating a self-fulfilling prophecy, where if the Fed believes the economy is weakening, they're afraid to acknowledge that because they think if they tell the truth, then businesses and consumers will react to that by, you know, preparing for a weaker economy, and the preparation is what's going to create it. So they try to keep the confidence going as long as possible to try to delay the onset of the recession. But of course, when they do that, they simply, you know, worsen the severity of the recession that is inevitably going to start. But I am sure that the Federal Reserve is going to react to the next crisis exactly the same way it's reacted to all of the previous crises. Now, if I'm wrong, then it's going to be a different type of collapse, because if the Fed doesn't do that, then the stock market's going to completely implode, not just 50%, but 80 or 90%. Real estate prices are going to collapse, and the government is going to have to default on not only its obligations to Social Security recipients or pensioners, they're going to have to default on Treasury bonds. And, of course, banks are going to fail, and there's going to be no money there because the FDIC is broke. So I don't know that Powell has the guts to actually force all those things to happen, but all those things would happen if we don't go back to zero and go back to quantitative easing. So, you know, my money is still on that the Fed is going to monetize all this and do what's politically expedient, not what's the right thing to do for the long-term health of the economy. I mean, there's no precedent really of the Fed doing that since Volcker. And, I don't think we've got a Volcker situation. Plus, you also have to realize the political gravity of this. If all this hits the fan in the next 2 years, the Democrats already have the House. They're going to get the Senate, and they're going to get the White House, and it's not going to be, you know, a Bill Clinton or even a Barack Obama. It's going to be a Bernie Sanders type. It's going to be a total socialist president, and he's going to have a mandate to dismantle capitalism, because capitalism is going to get the blame, and he's talking about less government and tax cuts and deregulation, and all that's going to get the blame for this collapse. And the solution is going to be for a complete government takeover of the economy. It's a very dangerous situation.
Okay, let's talk about the G20 meeting. Obviously, we have our U.S. president and China's Xi Jinping. They're meeting, the two economic superpowers will be meeting. And obviously, the topic du jour, tariffs and trade wars. Why don't you speak to the significance of whether or not they hammer out a deal and just what that might mean for the markets and precious metals?
I think the stock market has started the bear market, so most likely the stock market is going down in the U.S. regardless of a deal. I think if there's no deal and the tariffs actually kick in, it'll probably be much worse for the stock market than if there is a deal. And I do think that there will be some kind of deal, because I don't think Trump can afford to not make a deal. I mean, as much as he wants to talk about how our economy can withstand these 25% tariffs.
Obviously, the U.S. is on track to impose 25% tariffs or taxes, if you will, on $200 billion of Chinese imports. Currently, we're at 10%. That's due to go into place January 1st if they don't hammer out a deal this week. Tell us more.
Yeah, and remember, the tariffs are not on the Chinese. They're on Americans who want to buy Chinese imported products. Consumer has to pay the cost of the tariff. And, you know, a lot of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, and they really can't keep buying if everything gets 25% more expensive. They just don't have that much extra cash. So I think that there'd be a lot of damage in the U.S. if those tariffs were actually imposed. So I don't think Trump is going to chance it. So I think there's going to be some kind of deal. But, you know, just like the rebranding of NAFTA, I mean, nothing is going to change, right? The U.S. trade deficits are not going to go away. Nothing will have been accomplished. Even if Donald Trump wants to claim credit for having actually done something, nothing is actually going to be done. The only thing that will be done is we would have been spared the 25% tariffs that he himself was threatening to impose. But, you know, what everybody overlooks in the situation is how America is benefiting in the short run, not in the long run, but in the short run, how we have benefited from these massive trade deficits. Because what the trade deficit means is we get to consume stuff that we did not have to produce. See, the hard part is making the stuff. because there you need to expend resources, materials, labor, stuff like that. Just consuming the product, that's the fun part, right? And so what Americans have got, we've got all the good things without having to do any of the heavy lifting, right? It's like getting a paycheck without having to show up for work. I mean, most Americans, if they could get paid and not have to go to work, you know, they would take that. But what the Chinese are doing is they're working and they're not getting paid. They're making all this stuff and they're not getting anything. So they're the ones that are losing, and we're the ones that have been winning in the short run, that our standard of living has been artificially enhanced by the willingness of China and everybody else to supply us with merchandise that we don't pay for, that we don't produce exports to, you know. And so we get to live beyond our means. We get to enjoy a standard of living that is disproportionate to what we would otherwise be entitled to if we didn't have these trade deficits. Balanced trade, you know, we would have to import a lot less. We'd have to start making a lot more, but then we'd have to start saving and investing, and we couldn't keep spending.
Right. This is a key point that we've brought up here on the show, especially with Dr. Stephen Leib from time to time. Look, our leadership, they don't seem to make the connection. They don't get it, as they say today. What would be your recipe if you were thrust into political position to where you would try to reverse this mindset, this groupthink that we have here, and emulate some of China's success?
I want to emulate our own success. I mean, I really liked the idea of Trump, make America great again. I'm all for that. So we need to restore America to her former glory by recapturing the freedom that we lost. And what we have to do is rechain the government back up in the Constitution. We need to shrink the government back down to its constitutional size so that we can have maximum liberty and maximum prosperity. And, you know, capitalism is a wonderful thing. And with all the modern technology at our disposal, we could grow this economy probably like it's never grown before. We could probably have 10% a year growth rates if we really had a free market capitalism. But, you know, we have a lot of dismantling to do before we get from here to there. And, of course, you know, there's going to be some short-term pain as we deflate asset bubbles and as a lot of people have to be hit with reality. You've been counting on Social Security, you're not going to get it. You've been counting on Medicare, you're not going to get it. You've been counting on a government pension, you're not going to get it.
You might actually get the checks. That doesn't mean there'll be any purchasing power left.
But I don't want to give people worthless checks. I want to preserve the purchasing power of the dollar. I don't want to destroy it so politicians can pretend to keep their promises. But, you know, if we can get rid of, let's say we had a country where we can turn back the clock 100 years and get the government back down to 5% or so of GDP total, state, federal, and local. If we can eliminate all income taxes, not just corporate taxes, individual taxes, eliminate the Social Security tax, payroll tax, get rid of almost all the federal taxes that we now pay. Imagine the prosperity we can have in this country. Get rid of all these agencies, all these rules and regulations. So if somebody wants to start up a business, they just start it up. They don't need all this permission from all these regulators. They don't need a fortune. They could, you know, they could just, you know, start up a company.
Even traditional economics, I mean, pages torn right out of, you know, macro and microeconomics textbooks today, recognize and highlight and embolden the thought that transfer payments and some of these unnecessary taxing, I mean, they're incredibly inefficient means of trying to, you know, benefit those who really need help. It just doesn't work for the long term. Now, in short term, when you have economic disruptions, it does work, but merely in the short term. And the problem is, once you set these machines in motion, you never can easily dismantle them, as you're, you know, advising us to do today.
When you set up government agencies to help the poor, they don't really help the poor. They help the government, and they help, you know, impoverish the poor. They help perpetuate poverty.
If they'd stuck with the early mandate that this is a temporary fix, remember Social Security? Remember that about a century ago? The whole idea there was this is a short-term fix. We're going to dismantle it.
And it was supposed to be temporary. But look, it's like a camel's nose under the tent. You can't let government do that. Look, the best way to deal with truly true poverty or people in need is private charity. I mean, that is the best way to really cares. Individuals spending their own money really care about helping people. They want to give people a hand up. They don't want to perpetuate poverty.
That was the original concept from the Scottish pastors, a safety net there for widowers and their children. Okay, that was the original concept. It's sound 250 years later. It's still the only thing that really works. for sudden emergencies, I mean, there is a place for government to help. But you're right. Long term, it's inefficient.
What government can do is defense, national defense. I mean, so, you know, the government can have the Army and the Air Force, and I don't think we need the Space Force. I think we got plenty, the branches we got. But government can do national defense. And then on a local level, government is there to protect individual liberty and private property. That's what it's there for. It's there to make sure that other people don't steal from you. So government is not there to give you things. Government is just there to protect the things that you have. That's the limited role of government. So if you want something, go out and earn it. But you can't vote for government to steal from somebody and then give the money that they've stolen to you in exchange for your vote. Government is there to preserve liberty, protect liberty, life, liberty, and property, to make sure that our inalienable rights are protected. You don't have the right to a job. You don't have the right to health care. You don't have the right to education. You just have the right to keep what you have.
So you don't like up to, let's say, I don't know, 12th grade education in the United States? You're not a fan of public education?
I think private sector does a much better job, and to the extent that the government doesn't waste money on public education. See, parents, I trust parents to educate their kids. Parents care more about their kids than government bureaucrats. And parents will send their kids to school. It's not, you know, and if there were no public schools, parents would send their kids to private schools. And in fact, if there were no public schools, we'd have a lot more private schools because there'd be competition. There'd be a free market. People would be setting up schools to compete for educational dollars. You know, it's not like, look, parents buy clothes for their kids. Kids aren't starving to death. Parents buy food for their kids. Parents are going to educate their kids. They want their kids to succeed. And I would rather have parents choose among private providers of education who actually care about delivering quality products because they're subject to free market forces than a bunch of bureaucrats. The public education system is run for the benefit of the teachers and the administration.
Just circle back to the Spider Gold ETF, ticker GLD. You know, we saw massive inflows recently, and this is a trend we've seen in recent months, $472 million of inflows last month. This is a solid indication that maybe the institutions are starting to see something ahead for the yellow metal.
You know, I think they're still oblivious. I think if institutions were really moving into GLD, it would be a lot higher. And I think it will be a lot higher because I do think eventually people are going to see that the dollar is going to weaken and that inflation is going to be a big problem. Because as everybody assumes that a recession will take care of inflation, that's wrong, right? Inflation is not caused by economic growth, and a recession does not cure inflation. In fact, if anything, recessions are inflationary under normal circumstances, because what happens during a recession? Production goes down, so the supply of goods goes down, but governments have to print more money because the deficits go up. So you have more money printing, and you have a reduction in output. That is inflation. That is prices going up. And I think this next recession is going to be stagflation. It is going to be like the 1970s, only more so. And so I think that when people realize that inflation is going to be a huge problem and the Fed is not going to put out the fire, but it's going to throw gasoline on it, people are going to scramble for real inflation hedges, and the best one is gold, and I think gold is going to take off. And, you know, it is so underowned. I mean, nobody owns it. I mean, your listeners own it, and my clients own it, and I own some, and you own some. But believe me, I mean, you go to your typical, firm, asset management company, even hedge funds, they don't own it. The institutions, the endowments, your typical brokerage client. I mean, we've been in a bear market in gold for so long, right, that nobody has it.
There will be the listeners out there saying, you know, we've listened to Peter, we've listened to Chris for years, and we've heard the story from Nick Barishoff at, you know, Bullion Management Group, that less than 0.5% of pension funds that have anywhere from $4 trillion worth of assets have any money invested in the precious metals. And yet, year after year, they continue to ignore it.
I don't only own gold. I own a lot of assets around the world. I mean, I don't tell people to just have all your money in gold because one day it's going to go up. I just tell people have some money in gold because one day it will go up. I just don't know exactly when. I know obviously we're a lot closer to that point now than we were in the past, simply because the time has gone by and the problems have got a lot bigger. But, you know, we had a big bull market in gold from 2001 to 2011. Gold went up, you know, from under 300 to 1900. And I can tell you that before that bull market started, nobody was bullish on gold. It was the dot-com era. It was the new economy. You know, nobody wanted to have anything to do with gold. And people thought the U.S. was going to pay off the national debt. We were going to have surpluses as far as the eye can see. Institutions actually got short gold in 2001 for the first time. You know, gold had just gone through a 20-year bear market because it had peaked out in 1980. And then, of course, gold took off from under 300 to 1900. And, you know, it's been quiet since then. We've had a correction, you know, but I think we're building a base, you know, and we're getting ready for the next big move, which is going to take gold to $5,000 to $10,000 an ounce.
It sounds to me like your scenario parallels ours here. I mean, we see, you know, obviously around the world, the Fed's colleagues are now going to pick up the ball and start their quantitative tightening. Okay, the reverse of quantitative easing, at least to some degree. That's going to jack up rates. It's going to make the U.S. dollar a little less competitive. We could see an inversion of the yield curve maybe by summer of next year, or at least a continued flattening. So you bring all these pieces together, and you're likely going to see that downward push on rates. That bodes well for, you know, the yellow metal, which prefers negative real interest rates. We really haven't had, I think you'd agree, for the last year or two. So, I mean, it might put us back into that bullish territory. Closing thoughts on U.S. equities and precious metals.
Well, right now, I mean, I'm not even seeing what the news is, but everything is going up as we speak. You know, the Dow is up better than 400 points now on the day, but gold is starting to take off. Gold stocks are starting to jam. I'm looking at a lot of gold stocks up 3-5% today. I know Powell is talking, so maybe he said something that was interpreted as dovish, but I'm not seeing any real movement in the dollar yet. The dollar is still relatively flat. But everything is up today. Stocks are way up. Bitcoin is way up. Gold stocks are way up. So the oil's flat on the day. I still think this is a bear market rally in U.S. stocks. I think that the money that's going to be made in the stock market is going to be overseas. Emerging markets that have been beaten down. I think China, you know, Chinese market had a huge drop. I think if you're going to buy stocks, tech stocks in particular, the Chinese names are the ones to go for if you want to go into those stocks. But I think that everybody's got this thing wrong. I think China is the one that's going to come out on top when it comes to the trade war or a version of one, either way. But I think those names look good. And the oil stocks, you know, oil's been beaten down, and I think that oil's a great buy, you know, around $50 a barrel. I don't expect it to go much lower than that. I mean, obviously, we were close to 80 a couple months ago. But I think once the dollar starts to turn, which is what I expect, that's going to cause oil prices to rise because that's going to lead to increased demand globally for oil, and it's going to take all the pressure off of the emerging markets because it's the strength of the dollar and the anticipation that the dollar will keep strengthening that has been undermining those economies. But once they are relieved of that pressure, it's going to be, I think, a big boom.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add there is if your thesis is correct, and it, again, parallels my thoughts here, we do see West Texas Intermediate crude continue to reverse this temporary theme and start to move back up 70, 80, 90, 100. I mean, that's going to obviously put more pressure on U.S. equities. We need that energy. The energy is an important component of corporate profits. Start to change models on earnings for the earnings seasons and earnings estimates. Why don't you tell people more about Shift Gold, any other contact information?
Yeah, look, Shift Gold, that's my gold company. I run it now in partnership with Gold Money. We've got the best prices online for bullion. We don't do numismatics. We're just trying to get you the most gold for your money. And so shiftgold.com. Also, you can set up an account at goldmoney.com if you do want to have gold in a way that you can, you know, access it with a debit card and carry your gold around with you in your wallet. Take it out, you know, take it with you wherever you go because you have access 24 hours a day to spend it. And, you know, Monet, you know, check out Monet.com where you can buy gold jewelry. Basically, depending on the piece, sometimes it's 15% above spot, sometimes 25%, depending on the intricacy of the piece. But all the jewelry is made from pure gold, 24 karat gold. You know exactly how much gold you're getting, and you know you can sell it back to the company whenever you want for the value of the gold. So you know you can buy jewelry, but not blow all your money because you're still preserving it in gold. If you've got more money, if you've got a stock portfolio, you want me to manage money for you, whether it's a retirement account, IRA, whatever, pension or personal account, I manage money through Euro Pacific Asset Management and my broker dealer, Euro Pacific Capital. Our website is europac.com, europac.com, and our phone number is there if you want to give us a call. But I do think that there is a tremendous potential not only to avoid losses in the U.S. as the dollar goes down, but to actually profit from the dollar's demise. I think there's going to be some huge winners from the realignment of purchasing power as the dollar loses its reserve currency status. You know, Americans who have been living beyond their means are going to have to, you know, take a big notch down. But I think the rest of the world, which has lived beneath its means to make America living above its means possible, you're going to see some real wealth accumulation, and it's possible for investors to take advantage of that.
If we do see that bear market in U.S. equities that you're calling for, which still looks quite possible, if we do get a final washout, are you advising clients to maybe steer clear of the XEU and wait for that bottom? Or do you see some opportunities for people to sort of hop away from the high-flying things into something a little more conservative like the gold and silver shares?
I think there's a lot of value in gold stocks. I mean, I manage a value fund, and that value fund right now has about a 20-25% weighting to gold stocks. I mean, so that's not part of the mandate. It's not a gold fund. I mean, I have a gold fund also that's 100% gold stocks. But I think gold stocks are super cheap. I mean, they're as cheap as they've ever been. And so even for people who aren't necessarily gold bugs, they should still be buying these gold stocks. They can sell them on the next double or triple. I mean, I think they're going a lot higher than that, but obviously if they double or triple, they won't be the steals they are now. So even people who are not really long-term gold bugs, I think, could benefit by having an allocation now to a sector that is ridiculously undervalued relative to historic, you know, prices. So, yeah, I mean, I think if you want to gamble on stocks, I mean, I think you have a lot more upside relative to downside in the gold stocks than you do in the FANG stocks.
Let's look forward to seeing how much of this actually plays out early 2019.
Okay, bye-bye.